Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Guest today, Sophie Cooper. Sophie, thank you so much for coming. I'm really happy to have you. Just tell us where you're calling in from and what you do for a living with Anihana.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I'm calling from New Zealand today. So it's 10:30 in the morning.
Awesome.
And I am the founder and the smile director at Anihana.
I love that. What is the smile director? Tell me a little bit more about that. I quite like that title.
Yeah. So our mission is to make people smile and create joy. So my job as the smile director is to create products that make people smile.
That's amazing. So you're kind of working in product development mostly with this brand.
Yeah, I was the CEO for a couple of years, but quickly decided that wasn't really my thing, and I'm back doing what I'm good at and what I love. So
I love that. Yeah. Well, tell me a little bit more, I guess, just about your general background and leading up to getting involved with this brand. I mean, you know, what kind of made you want to get into this space, and what did you kind of see out there in the market that was kind of missing for people that you felt, you know, was a good fit for this kind of idea and brand?
Yeah, so I was originally a florist for 10 years. So I've always loved creating beautiful things and making people smile, I guess. And originally from the UK, I moved to New Zealand about 16 years ago. And I was working for a lady that had a soap factory and also a florist. So I used to sell the flowers with these soaps and bath bombs. And I fell in love with the product. I was about to go on maternity leave. I was 8 months pregnant, and my boss at the time decided she wanted to sell her soap factory. So I went home that night and jokingly said to my husband, should we buy this business? And a few months later, had a new baby and a new business. So
Amazing. It
was pretty, it was pretty full on. I didn't really know how to do either, like grow a business or grow a baby, I guess, or raise a child. So trying to figure that out as I went. But what I did know was, like, my me time and relaxation at the end of the day was to jump in the bath when the kids are asleep and have that me time that we need. So I wanted to create that for other people as well.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. I love that. And I guess when you think about, you know, obviously your own personal experience, like, you kind of base it off your own experiences with, you know, being a new mother, the things you like to, you know, the things you enjoy, and, you know, take some time to yourself during that time, which is obviously, you know, takes up all of your time being a parent. Mm-hmm. So when you find, like, you think about kind of like your ideal customer, somebody who, you know, you think is going to be, you know, the biggest part of, you know, going on this journey with you with this brand, do you kind of try to market or, you know, kind of message to new mothers in that way, or just like, or new parents, or is it a little bit more general?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's something we think about a lot. It definitely started as kind of new mothers and millennial moms. And, you know, when it was just me by myself, I'd often see orders come through Shopify at 2 a.m. and I could just imagine it was moms breastfeeding, doing some online shopping and things. So, because that's what I did. But then as we've kind of grown and gone into kind of these mass retail channels, it's definitely got more general. We see, you know, a lot of the Gen Zs and a lot of the mums are buying the products, but then we're seeing the end consumer is their kids as well. So yeah, that's really fun. We get often a lot of feedback that they buy the bath bomb or the shower steamer or soap, but then they never get to use it because their kids stole it.
I always love that. It's such an interesting thing I find in a lot of the conversations that I have when people look at, you know, especially when you're selling direct to consumer, obviously you have all that data, which is awesome. And it's almost always skewed towards, you know, women as, like, at least the buyers. But we find that, you know, in having these conversations, that the end consumer, like you said, is not always necessarily those mothers or those women, but they're just people, like, buying these things for their families or their husbands or their partners or whoever it might be. So that's something that kind of came to light in my mind recently that I never really considered before, but it's always really interesting. And that's something I hear a lot from people, like, kind of across industries. So yeah, that's really fascinating. So you still kind of find, though, you're like, you know, your buyer is still typically like a mother, millennial, kind of in that general demographic.
I would say, yeah, definitely like 90% women between 18 and 35, that kind of age. Yeah,
that's amazing, and it's obviously such a great gift too. I mean, I can imagine if you could ask every single person who buys it, you know, why they're buying it. I'm sure most of the time, if I had to guess, it was probably in the gift space. And I see you're, you know, doing a big Mother's Day thing on the website. So, do you find any kind of you know, seasonality with this product for those reasons? Like, do you find kind of an uptick in your sales through your retail and your direct to consumer, kind of in the more like the holiday season, in the winter time? Or
yeah, definitely. With kind of those special occasions like Mother's Day, Christmas, even Easter, actually, we had a bit of a uptake over Easter recently, I think, with people making kind of these Easter egg baskets for their kids and didn't want to put chocolate in. So it's and because I guess our products are quite small and affordable, it's quite nice to add a few things with a pop of color that isn't chocolate.
Yeah, no, I can definitely see that too. And I guess between obviously you sell it online, I can see that. And then I know you'd mentioned you kind of gotten bigger into retail more recently. What's kind of the breakdown between what you're doing with, you know, how much you're, you know, I was going like specific numbers, but I guess just kind of like a percentage breakdown of like, you know, how much business you're doing through your retail and wholesale channels versus what you're doing through your e-commerce site, or if you're on Amazon or anything like that?
Yeah, so we currently sell in New Zealand. We export to Australia and the US. Been in the US for a couple of years now, and it's our biggest market at the moment. So I think we're about 60%. Business with the US. Our online sales are actually really low. It's since we launched on Amazon, it's improved, but I would say we're about 95% wholesale, 5% retail, but we do want to increase that this year. We have definitely been retail focused, like we're in Target and Walmart, and yeah, and I think that's because my husband, who joined the business full-time 3 years ago, he's got that CPG experience and he knows the industry. And so that's why we kind of ended up going down that route.
Yeah, that's amazing. And how did you get involved with those relationships initially? I mean, it sounds like your husband already maybe had some connections in that space, which obviously helps. But I'm always curious, you know, the different strategies people utilize. I mean, some people I talk to, they say like, I just cold called every Target buyer for like a year straight until like, you know, I finally got in a conversation with somebody. Or sometimes people, you know, they'll go viral on social media and allow buyers reach out to them directly. What was your kind of experience getting involved in retail for the first time?
I mean, we've technically been going for about nearly 8 years. But Annie Hanna as a brand is only nearly 3 years old. So when I originally bought the business, we stayed as like a contract manufacturer for businesses in New Zealand. And then we created our own brand. And we were originally called R-A-H-H, because that's the sound you make when you get in the bath at the end of
the
day.
But
then, about 3 years ago, we did a total rebrand. So new packaging, new name. Annie Hanna is actually my daughter's middle name, who I was pregnant with at the start of the journey.
Beautiful name. Yeah, I love that.
So it's really important, like special name for us. And so my husband's experience definitely helped us in New Zealand and Australia because he had those connections. And we didn't plan on launching in the US so quickly, but we randomly met a ex-Target buyer who is now a broker. And she suggested that we pitch to Target during the range review coming up. But she was very clear that we wouldn't get in because we're brand new, but it's good to get in front of them early and keep going. So we wasn't expecting any ranging, but we ended up launching and trial about 300 stores. So we ended up launching in Australia and the US at the same time, which was very stressful. And then it's gone really well. So we've increased to, I think we're in 1,600 stores now in Target.
Wow.
And then the Walmart thing was just probably a very different experience to other people, where the naturals buyer actually contacted me via Instagram.
Oh, very cool. Yeah.
And then I passed it over to my husband and they had regular meetings. He flew over and we got ranged in 4,000 stores straight away. So that's been a massive learning. So yeah, I guess less kind of, when we were the original brand R, there was a lot of kind of me begging retailers to take us. I'm not a salesperson. To when we rebranded and my husband joined, it kind of went the other way, where we were being approached by retailers, which blows my mind because it's same packaging, same product, just different packaging, you know, which we've relied on heavily since we launched. Yeah,
no, that's amazing. I always love to hear the different stories of, you know, people getting involved in retail, because they all seem to be super unique, which is, it's always so, so interesting. So I appreciate you sharing that. And I guess I'm curious too, you said you do all your manufacturing there in New Zealand.
Yeah, so we used to make everything ourselves, so 100% all our products, and our range goes from, you know, shampoo bars, conditioner bars, soaps, bath bombs, shower steamers, moisturizers. So we had quite a large range. And when we launched in Australia and America, we just couldn't keep up ourselves making everything because it's very kind of a handmade product still. So at the moment we make about 25% still ourselves. So we've kept some of the soaps and bath bombs in-house. And then we use two New Zealand manufacturers that make the rest of the products.
That's fascinating. So how do you kind of grapple with the, you know, obviously maybe added cost or added, you know, logistical issues that come with, you know, shipping to the US from somewhere as far as New Zealand from maybe, you know, obviously, you know, we have a ton of products coming from Mexico and Canada, even from the UK, but, you know, Australia and New Zealand just being so far, what kind of things did you have to grapple with to make that, you know, US connection work?
I mean, originally when we launched, it was during, I think we had a COVID lockdown here. So, and then the shipping was just all over the place. So that was quite stressful. I think our first shipment to the US got delayed by weeks and weeks because there was a massive queue at Long Beach. So that was definitely stressful, but we've got a great team now. We've got, you know, experts in supply chain in New Zealand. And then we've got really good 3PL partners. So I guess we've just kind of constantly tried to improve. Like at the start, we definitely didn't do everything the right way, but I think we're getting there now.
That's great. No, yeah, I know a lot of people struggle with, you know, that kind of things, even shipping within the US as a US based brand. So the fact to be able to, you know, to figure that out is, it was obviously challenging, but that's great to be able to tap into the US market naturally. And do you exist in any other markets? I mean, obviously your D2C channels, I'm sure, you know, if you're shipping to the US, you can probably ship anywhere. Have you found any kind of like acceleration in any other markets, but besides, you know, New Zealand, Australia, and US, like in any other countries, maybe in the UK or Canada or anywhere like that?
We are starting to look at new markets. We do definitely want to keep growing the brand. I think we're a little bit scarred from doing Australia and the US at the same time.
Fair enough, yeah.
Very expensive as well.
Yeah.
So at the moment, we kind of see the biggest opportunity is to expand more in the US and that D2C opportunity and really kind of grow our brand there because we haven't really done any marketing yet. So kind of so people understand, you know, what is the brand and what do we stand for rather than just being cool product with bright packaging. But then we're starting to look at either Asia or UK, Europe as our next market.
Yeah, this is amazing though. I love that. And I'm going to ask you one question I always love to ask everybody that comes to the podcast. If you watch any of mine, you'll see it. I always try to ask this question, which is, so obviously bought the business 4 years ago, learned a ton since then, just like, you know, everything we've been talking about. If you could go back and maybe give yourself, if you could start again, just one piece of advice, if you can go back to the beginning, what do you think that piece of advice would be?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think at the start when it was just myself, and I think it's great that you have to kind of learn everything yourself so that it's been a journey of learning, but also for me of kind of unlearning and kind of letting go of certain things. It's hard as a founder of your baby, and it's, you know, as your team grows, it's, for example, I used to do all the social media and it was quite hard letting that go, but I think you just kind of you get to the stage where you have to and you just can't physically do everything yourself and you get burnt out, which has definitely happened to us. So I think, and then the more you can kind of trust people in your team and learn from them is really, you're in a great place then, I think. I love the team we've got now, and I love learning about, I mean, I'm not great at supply chain operations and the finance side, but I've learned so much in the last couple of years since we've grown our team.
No, that's amazing. And you're probably not surprised to hear that it's actually a pretty common answer I get to that question, which is just like, you know, take the time to find good partners, but like, just don't be afraid to outsource, even though, you know, it came from you, it's your baby. You don't want to, like, you know, necessarily give up too much control, especially in the early stages. But it sounds like you've taken the time and the diligence to find a really great team to surround yourself with, which is an answer I get to that question very, very often. Like, even not exactly the same, but just to say, you know, don't jump into partnerships too fast, but make sure you're doing it, but just be diligent about it is really the general gist of, you know, kind of answers I get to that pretty often. So I think it's really good advice. And it's good to hear it, you know, multiple times from multiple successful entrepreneurs, because it's just so important. So I appreciate that advice. Yeah.
The other one would be probably don't launch in two markets at the same time.
Yeah. I can hear that. Yeah.
Like, yeah. Don't rush to grow too fast. Yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing. And then I guess just last question, it's just something that popped into my mind when you mentioned that you still own some of the manufacturing process for some of your products is, has anybody approached you with, like, you know, white labeling or private labeling opportunities with those things that you are still making and have, you know, ownership over? Or if they haven't, I mean, is that something you would consider? Or
yeah, I think that's what we originally did. It was very kind of small batch, but okay. We had to kind of slowly stop doing that because we needed to focus on our own products.
Right.
We do still get some inquiries, but I think we had to make a decision on whether to invest in the manufacturing site or whether to invest in the brand and new markets. So yeah, if we had all the money in the world, then yeah, we could put some money into our own factory because I love it there. That's why I kind of bought it. It's my happy place. I love the actual making of the product. But yeah, we just had to make that choice. Right now it's focusing on the brand and the new markets.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, Sophia, I just want to say thank you again for coming on. I really appreciate your insights and your passion for what you're doing. I love the brand. I love what you guys are doing. And yeah, I just want to say and just give you a quick opportunity as well, just to shout out your website, your social media pages. Anybody listening may be interested in, you know, a potential business partnership with you or just wants to try some of your products, see where they can find them in the US or Australia or New Zealand. Just let everybody know how to stay in touch with you guys.
Yeah. So our own D2C is AnnieHannahLife.com. And we're on Amazon. We've got a storefront on Amazon at AnnieHannah. And then we're also available in Target and Walmart.
Amazing. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Sophia. I just want to say thank you again and wish you the best of luck, continued success. I love what you all are doing there. And yeah, best of luck with everything. I look forward to staying in touch with you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sophie. Thanks, everybody.